And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well out there. We got a big show today. Ben McKee from VolQuest.com dropping by at 6:30. We'll talk all things Tennessee Vols with him. John Glennon at 8 o'clock from SI.com with the latest on the Tennessee Titans. Stephen Holder, now of ESPN, at 9 o'clock for all things NFL. And we'll focus in a little bit on the Indianapolis Colts as well coming up at 9 o'clock. As always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks to Michelle for the first game certificate from the White Sox game. That's really cute that you and Ryan. By the way, I have been there. I've seen the Tigers actually destroy that team a few times in that stadium, I believe.
Wow.
Back when the Tigers were good. And so apparently Brooklyn Porth and I both get our little first game certificate.
Listen, and me. Thanks. I got one too.
Oh, you got one too?
Heck yeah.
Okay.
What a trio. What a trio that is.
Yeah. And also thanks to your grandma for the
care package.
Yeah, so you got Kit Kats and I got licorice.
Yeah.
I love black licorice, but we did talk about how black licorice kills people. So is this because your grandma likes me or dislikes me?
She's playing the long game.
Yeah.
No, she likes you, but now that I was thinking about it, I'm like, okay, we might need to switch up the candy a little bit, Joe. We need to get some other options in there for you.
Just moderation.
Nah, you'd be all right. Yeah,
moderation. Just don't eat the whole I mean, I could eat the whole package, but I've learned. So thanks to your grandma.
Michelle, how are you? What's going on?
Guys, doing great this morning. I was so excited to give Joe that first game certificate because when we made it at the stadium, I lost it. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. I don't know why.
So it's pretty funny.
I mean, yeah, it's a little printed out certificate. What is this, like some station there where you go?
Yep.
And you, yeah.
So I got mine, and then Ryan and I were walking away, and we were like, wait a minute. And he went back.
Must do.
He went back and said that his name was Joe Rex Road. So like, can you spell your name for me? And he was like, J-O-E. And I was like crying, snorting, laughing in the corner. I couldn't stand near it. Just I thought it was so funny.
Hey, shout out to Ryan for spelling Joe Rex Road correctly.
Good job, Ryan.
True. I was actually nervous for a second. And then if I interjected and was like, actually, that's not how you spell your name, the guy would have been like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
that would have been pretty awesome.
So yeah, doing great this morning, guys.
Good stuff. Speaking of Joe Rex Road, a lot of Joe Rex Road discussion here on the program today. We will have some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis coming up on Saturday, August 13th and Sunday, August 14th. The winner of these tickets will be required coming up later in the 7 o'clock hour to give us your best Joe Rex Road impersonation. So you can take that any way you want to take it. You can try to match his voice. You can try to match him yelling at Jared. Any way you want to take it, yelling about the, I don't know, the Boston Celtics of the 80s, the Bulls of the 90s, whatever you want to take it, we'll have that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Your best Joe Rex Road impersonation, the winner, will receive a pair of tickets to the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis coming up on Saturday, August 13th and Sunday, August 14th as well.
I hate listening to my own voice, so maybe I shouldn't judge, because if someone is actually good and sounds like me, then I may dislike that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe I'll let you guys judge.
Well, I certainly want your input, but yeah, maybe we'll judge. But
yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it sounds like a bleep show, but we'll see.
Well, it'll be awesome. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we are looking forward to that. So the pads come on yesterday for the Titans at training camp, and Treylon Burks, another good day at training camp yesterday for the Titans. Now, offensively overall, it did not go the way that Ryan Tannehill wanted to. Said it, quote, wasn't clean enough for the offense yesterday. So there's that part of it as well with the defense having a good day. Roger McCreary apparently all over the field yesterday. TD said he had 5 pass breakups out there yesterday. So a pretty good day for McCreary out there on the field yesterday. But yet another day, Joe, where Treylon Burks is stealing the show. He had 2 touchdowns in the team period. And this has now been a week straight of training camp where Treylon Burks has been pretty darn good the whole time. So I ask you, what does that mean? With Treylon Burks playing this well and looking this good so far in training camp on a consistent basis, what do you read into that this far, you know, a week into camp?
Well, I don't want to overreact to it, but it's best case scenario at this point for sure. So, you watch him, and it's hard to It's hard to not think that he's going to do some good things for the Titans this year. It's still there's still a difference, obviously, on Sundays and game planning and a different opponent and all that stuff. You get familiar with the same DBs you're going against and maybe some of the same looks. But look, the guy's he's bigger and faster than most people. So, and he's catching everything. His hands look great. It's one of those things. It's like we didn't even get to the point of asking about his hands in the spring because it never, you know, he wasn't even out there. So, he looks, I said this before, I'll say it again. I mean, his feet off the line look quicker to me than I thought. So, you don't want to, I mean, I'm not ready to say he's wide receiver one or anything like that, but I feel like if he keeps this up and he stays out there, he's going to more and more contribute to this offense. And maybe by the end of the year, he is wide receiver one or 1A, 1B with Robert Woods.
Well, we've talked about this. I've always been one, probably slower than most, to really put a whole lot of stock into practice and training camp practice especially. But I will say, like, when you do it on a consistent basis over a period of time, I start to pay attention to that. Now, is a week into camp enough time? Not for me yet. Like, I need to see him do this for a little bit longer. But certainly, if you're a Titans fan, like, the fact that we're having this type of discussion about Treylon Burks right now is light years different to the discussion we were having about Treylon Burks heading into camp, and that by itself to me is really good. But it goes back to what we talked about earlier, Joe. You know, once you get past the is he in shape, is he not in shape, how quickly can he get in shape when camp comes around, there's the fact that he's a pretty darn good player in the SEC. And, you know, we talked about Treylon Burks before the Titans traded A.J. Brown back in the pre-draft process of, yeah, man, if he's there, that's somebody I'd like to see the Titans go get. And then, obviously, it played out the way that it did. But, you know, this, to me, I'm not willing to just say that I'm expecting big things from Treylon Burks quite yet. But if he keeps this up for another couple of weeks in training camp, to me, I'm feeling pretty good about Treylon Burks if I'm a Titans fan.
Yeah. Well, and just think about what it may have been going into camp. I thought, well, Robert Woods, ACL, they're going to be careful. So, you know, maybe he won't, you know, he'll do some stuff. Well, he's doing everything with no brace. And then, of course, you didn't know about Treylon Burks. I mean, I thought it might be like Nick Westbrook-Akina and, you know, whoever taking out those reps. And a lot of other guys are getting reps, by the way. See, like, important reps, you know, Cody Hollister and obviously Dez Fitzpatrick and all those guys. But, yeah, this is best-case scenario. And it's you know, pads just went on, so the thing is, that just makes him look bigger, you know. So,
well, that's the thing, because, like, I think there are, you know, at some positions, rookies, you worry about the pads going on of, okay, well, can they handle physicality at the NFL level? I don't really worry about that with Treylon Burks. Like, he's a big guy. I mean, we've talked about he's been a big guy all offseason. We've talked about that. So, like, the pads coming on for me, for him, I think probably highlights his skill set more than anything else.
Yeah, no doubt. And people are bouncing off him left and right. Some of that might be called in a real game. He's got to be careful about extending the arms and stuff like that. But sometimes I think it looks like it must be OPI, but it's actually just someone bouncing off him. It's part of, to me, probably the most, I guess, encouraging part of camp that you didn't know. If you could isolate him, but also, again, Woods and Chigakonkwo also, for me, is exceeding kind of what I thought from him. I mean, he is making really good catches in traffic, runs really well. Like Dez Fitzpatrick, Racy McMath. I mean, like, the pass-catching aspect of the team right now is definitely ahead of what I thought it would be. And it's pretty close to, like, ideal situation right now. But, again, right now.
Right. And, you know, things are about to continue to ramp up here. You know, the Ravens game is next week, which is hard to believe. The preseason football is already almost here. But, you know, we'll find out in those games / practices with Bucks and the Cardinals as well, you know, how do you look against other NFL top competition? So it's going to continue to be a learning process here. But I said this yesterday, Joe, and I think this is probably as big of a deal as anything else. The fact that Treylon Burks, Robert Woods, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, all these guys that are going to be catching balls from Ryan Tannehill this year, they've been out there every day. Like, that's to me, when you start stacking days and days become weeks in training camp where everybody's available, that to me is when you can start to build something with an offense. And so far, so good on that front, too, with you haven't, you know, knock on wood, had any injury setbacks yet either in camp with the skill positions.
Right, right. Yeah, and with Woods going back to the spring some, I mean, he did more in the spring than I would have guessed. Certainly with Austin Hooper going back to the spring and Chig. I mean, Tannehill's has put together some time with these guys, and it looks like, you know, it looks like it's paying off. He already has, again, with Westbrook-Ikhina, I think it's a really good connection. And Burks, I mean, even like just some of the timing routes and stuff, they seem to be totally on the same page, which is a little bit surprising. Like day one of camp.
Yeah.
You know, there was one play I was like, wow, that's a, you got to have trust that your receiver's coming back to that spot. He did on good coverage by Farley on that play. So it's been really good. It looks good. I think that just the idea that Tannehill's going to have more people he feels comfortable with, I think that's a pretty safe thing to say right now when you consider how much Julio missed last year, Marcus Johnson missed last year. So injuries haven't happened yet. But just as far as number of guys who he likes. And like Firkser last year. Firkser and Tannehill have had a great connection, but then he just wasn't as effective once he hurt himself late in camp. So right now it looks like he's definitely going to have more people. It's going to be more like 20 than 21 with multiple people he feels good throwing to, as opposed to last year it was basically A.J. Brown, you know, and whoever was out there.
Yeah.
I mean, Chester Rogers, you know, but there was some limitations there.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to some takeaways for the first day in pads yesterday in Titans training camp as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Ryan, throw a pick so far in camp. He looking particularly...
I think he's been pretty decisive, and I think he's been accurate. I think there's some throws today I'm sure he'd like to have back. I mean, that may... hopefully that's just kind of being down in the red zone for the first time. And, you know, it's early, but I obviously think that that's a step in the right direction is how we want to practice.
Last year you threw five picks in the first 5 days of practice, no picks so far in any of the team periods. What's the difference?
I don't know. I'm not going to get into last year or anything like that. You know, just trying to be smart with the ball, you know. Sometimes in practice you're pushing the limits, right? I mean, that's the point of practice, especially early on in training camp and the spring, is you're kind of pushing the limits and seeing where you can put the ball and if you can fit it in there, what catch radius guys have and things like that. But it's a balance. You know, you want to be smart. You know, today we're down in the red zone, so you know, want to play situational ball there a little bit and be smart with the football, not put the ball in harm's way. But you know, we just know as quarterbacks that it's our job to try to take care of the football and put it in a good spot. So we want to train those good habits as we go.
That was Mike Vrabel and Ryan Tannehill yesterday after Titans practice. Day number one in pads for the Titans yesterday. Joe, I think one of my favorite things that has happened so far in training camp is, like, every time Jared asks Ryan Tannehill a question, he just starts laughing before his response.
I was just going to say, every time. Does he laugh every time Jared asks him a question?
It's hilarious.
Like, would it matter what Jared asks?
I don't know. It hasn't so far.
We need to do an experiment. They have Jared just ask like the most basic, mundane, how would you evaluate your day or something like that?
Tannehill starts laughing.
And Tannehill just...
he did. He just... I don't know, man. It's practice.
So, like his obsession with the picks last year in camp, man.
Ugh.
I mean, that particular question should have been laughed at. But yeah, he laughs every time.
A lot of talk about practice out here.
Yeah, yeah.
Allen Iverson would not be a big fan of what's been happening around here.
I tell you, I mean, it's Tannehill's trending toward maybe the best season of all time. Right? You look at his completion percentage, look, yards per attempt, no picks,
yeah,
like bunch of touchdowns.
If this translates to the regular season, you don't have to worry about Malik Willis being the starter in 2023. I can tell you that.
Oh,
MVP.
Give Tannehill a new deal.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll probably have to redo his deal. Maybe they might redo his deal by like mid-August if he keeps playing like this. And what else do you need to see? What's more important than this, you know?
Ugh, man.
From just, the biggest story in camp, Ryan Tannehill.
Amazing stuff out there yesterday. So it was the first day in pads. They, you know, they did red zone. Tannehill spoke yesterday about the offense and maybe not having the day that they wanted to yesterday. You know, that's the thing about training camp, and I think Vrabel kind of touched on this yesterday too. When your offense has a good day, you look around and you say, huh, what's going on with the defense? And when your defense has a good day, you say, huh, what's wrong with the offense today? Like, it's hard for both sides of the ball to win. Yeah, I guess as a coach, like if you're Vrabel in these situations, what do you want? Like, do you want it to, I don't know if alternate days is the best way to put it, but do you want to see some back and forth in training camp? What are you looking for if you're Vrabel and the coaching staff in days like this?
Well, I feel like a year ago you wanted some wins for the defense. Maybe that's why Tannehill's throwing those picks. I'm just saying. I will, by the way, on that whole thing, I will agree with Jared on one thing. My question last year to him, it was a bad question. Because it was like, so are you just doing this to, like, you know, which I believed, but still, like, that, you got to ask an open-ended question. Bad question by me. But the question of, like, are you just trying to, like, let it rip, basically, which is, I think, what he was doing. But still. It was a leading question. Don't ask leading questions. Ask open-ended questions.
There you go.
But I think last year they wanted maybe the defense to have a little success, right? And now this year it's probably like it'd be great to see the offense do some good things, but they have been. You know, the receivers look good. We've talked about it. So I think you want some back and forth. You can have good – like, again, like the ideal play is like the play I mentioned earlier, Treylon Burks – really good coverage by Farley. It's the one spot you can complete the pass. You throw the pass there. He catches it. Farley's right there. It's not a big play. You know, as a defensive coach, there's always a weakness in your defense. There's always something that can be given up if the offense just takes what you're giving them. So if that's all it is and they don't hit big plays on you, then you feel like as a coach, at some point, they're going to commit a turnover. You're going to have a sack. You're going to have a penalty. And they're not going to get 6 points on the drive. So not giving up big plays, you know, I think is a big thing there, just thinking about it defensively. But, yeah, I think you want some back and forth. And, apparently McCreary.
Yeah.
I've thought he's been pretty good. Apparently he was outstanding yesterday. And it's interesting because Elijah Molden is not out there. So you're seeing with McCreary, he's worked outside, he's worked inside. Now you wonder. Yeah, because I don't think Caleb Farley right now is doing anything to, you know, to be jeopardized as far as starting. I mean, it's early, but he looks like a starter to me. But is McCreary possibly pushing Elijah Molden?
Well, it's interesting, and you know, I remember when they picked him in the second round. I was like, really? You went corner in the second round? You just took a corner last year in the first round. You know, we said basically the same thing about Petit Frere with Raiden as well. So you took a corner last year in the first round and a right tackle in the second round last year, and your second and third round picks this year were a corner and then a right tackle. Interesting. See how that works out. But the one question mark we've had about this defense heading into the year, at least as far as the starters are concerned, was Caleb Farley in that spot. Well, again, it's early. But if he's Caleb Farley that he's been so far in camp and he's reliable and McCreary comes in and can give you some important minutes too, well, all of a sudden you look at this defense and Fulton, McCreary, Farley, Molden, you're feeling pretty good about your cornerback group, and then you're looking around the rest of the starters and wondering, okay, well, where's the weak spot of this defense? Again, very early, don't overreact, but that's best case scenario for this Titans defense if it plays out that way.
Yeah, and – you know, Buster Skrine retiring isn't ideal, but if those four young guys are healthy and playing well, then you're fine, and maybe you're really good. And we'll see. I'm very interested to see Caleb Farley and McCreary against different receivers, you know, and those practices and things like that. We'll see how much work they get in the preseason games. But
well, not just the receivers. Like, when you're playing against Brady in practice, like, I put some stock into that. Like, because he's going to – I mean, he's seen everything that, that you could possibly see, and he's going to try to pick you apart. And how do you handle that if you're Caleb Farley, if you're Roger McCrary? I mean, that's going to be a pretty big test in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, great. I mean, it's great work. It's great work. And, you know, look, Kyler Murray, one of the stories of the offseason. But, hey, the guy can look.
Imagine how much film he'll have studied by then. My God.
Exactly. I mean, but maybe he didn't even study film last year. Whatever he did, he carved them up, yeah. You know. So, I mean, you're going to get two good QBs to see because, you know, I mean, the preseason games, probably aren't going to see much of anything. You're not going to play. Who knows? I don't know. They need to almost get rid of them altogether. Just do like rotating practices with all the teams, you know?
You remember how excited we were for preseason football last year because we didn't have it in 2020?
Yeah.
That went away quick.
And it was just like, oh, yeah. Yep, here it is. Yep. Yeah. So, but those practices, the fact that they got two this year against two, you know, really, you know, one really great quarterback and then a really good one, should be good work. But yeah, that corner group is it's promising. Now we'll see with Molden, though. You know what's up with Molden. It's been a pretty healthy camp so far, but you don't want to lose him for significant time. And I've thought that Molden was one of those kind of underrated players who could take a big jump this year, but you gotta be healthy, gotta be available.
Liam on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, losing A.J. still stings, but is it possible the receiving group this year will actually be better even without him? We're going to get that question a lot, Joe Rexrode. What do you think?
Well, it goes back to the thing with A.J., which is I still would ask, does anyone in this receiving core have like a San Francisco game in them, a game at Indy in them? He's in other moments where he really has taken over games. That's my question. I like Robert Woods a lot, but there's still a difference. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, no. He's a good player. Treylon Burks, at some point, but this year? I don't know. I mean, that might be asking too much. Again, it's like I think that the variety of weapons definitely is trending toward being better, but just because you have to consider the tight ends, and that is better.
There's
and
no
like,
question.
Like the tight end situation last year was bad. They didn't address it enough, and they paid for it. And they've addressed it now. And so the variety of pass catchers, I think. And by the way, Dontrell Hilliard, again, I'll say, I think coming with a full offseason, knowing he's a third down back, that's his job. He looks good out there. I think he's gonna give this team the best third down back. No, all due respect to McWeapon, because Nichols did a really nice job. But I think Hilliard will be the most effective third down back here than there's been in a while. I mean, I guess like at some point Deion Lewis kind of became that, but he was also like the main back for a lot of that year. I mean, the overall group, I think, better, Liam, but would you trade more variety for having the one star who – not only can take over a game, but also can manipulate a defense? Does anybody on this team scare a defense into doing different things? Yeah, I don't know about that.
I think it's probably not at first. We'll see if Treylon Burks grows into that.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy who ultimately would be that guy.
We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Ben McKee from VolQuest.com. We'll get his thoughts on day number one of fall camp for Josh Heupel and company yesterday up in Knoxville. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Ben McKee from VolQuest.com. Ben, what's going on? How are we doing?
Robbie, Joe, how are y'all? I'm doing well.
We're great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So day number one of fall camp yesterday for Josh Heupel and company. What were some things that stood out to you yesterday, Ben, as the Vols get things rolling here this fall?
Yeah, there were a couple of different things that stood out to me. Obviously, you have to take things with a grain of salt because it is practice number one of fall camp. But I think the obvious takeaway, and this is obvious because Josh Heupel going from year one to year two, and that's the overall size and speed and strength of the team. You can tell that they are very comfortable with Josh Heupel and his coaching staff, the returning players, the newcomers who are here in the spring and those that went through spring practice. They understand what to do and just how practice works, simply. And I know that seems so simplistic, but that's something that they were trying to get used to this time last year. And I thought you could tell a night and day difference. It looks like a coaching staff that has been here and is not getting their feet wet. So that was obvious. And there were other things across, you know, positions on both sides of the ball. For me personally, I was surprised by the defensive backs, and mostly because I didn't have great expectations for them. They were very minimal, not much of an expectation for the defensive backs, especially how they performed last year. But they have a couple of guys that I'm very intrigued by: Georgia Tech transfer Wesley Walker, Ohio State transfer Andre Turrentine. Those two guys looked real good on day one, and I think that they are going to play a lot of snaps for Tennessee. You've got the veteran safeties coming back. Trayvon Flowers, I think he could be this year's Theo Jackson in terms of a guy who hasn't really produced a ton over the course of his career. And then finally it all clicks and comes together as a senior. I thought he looked good yesterday. Jalen McCullough has slimmed down. We'll see if that can lead to him being more efficient in space. And then I thought Kamal Haddon and Warren Burrell, the two that I think are going to be the starting corners for the opener, I thought they were bouncing around and looking pretty good. And they have some intriguing freshmen. Christian Harrison, the son of Rodney Harrison, I thought he looked real good on day one. So that was my biggest takeaway from a position standpoint, is that the defensive backs are maybe further along than I anticipated. But that's also because my expectations for them were so low. I don't think that they're going to go out there and be a secondary that we're used to seeing with Alabama or LSU, but I do think they're going to be very formidable.
Yeah, I thought, Ben, Turrentine in particular, I liked some stuff he did. I wonder, do you feel like a Turrentine, a Walker, could even challenge in the next month to get into that starting lineup?
Yes, I certainly think so. And I think it'll be at that nickel position, especially Wesley Walker. He has experience, having played three seasons at Georgia Tech, so I think that is going to be very valuable for him. And then Andre Turrentine, he's just too talented to keep off the field. And he transferred. Yes, he is a Tennessee native, but he transferred just because of the logjam of talent at Ohio State. It wasn't necessarily him doing anything wrong at Ohio State. It's just Ohio State is one of those 3-4 schools right now that is they don't recruit, they draft. And Andre Turrentine, a very talented player that suffered from that. So in hopes of finding more playing time, he decided to leave. And from my understanding, the Ohio State coaching staff wasn't too thrilled about him leaving, just because they do think that he is very talented, and they thought that they were losing a really good football player. So I think his talent is going to be near impossible to keep him off the field. Still a little young, doesn't have a ton of game experience, so he'll probably have to go through some things and learn along the way, but he's just far too talented to keep off the field. So I expect both of those guys to really factor in at the nickel position to start right away.
Ben McKee from VolQuest.com on with us here on Robbie and Retro. So, Ben, we've talked a lot, obviously, about Hendon Hooker this offseason, and you know, his stats last year were just ridiculous. I mean, the guy threw three picks the whole year last year. So it's year two in this offense. He's the unquestioned starter heading into this season. How does he have a better year? What does a better year for Hendon Hooker look like in your mind, given the fact that his stats were so ridiculous last year?
Right. I think that there's just going to be a natural progression for the simple fact that he is the starter going into game one. I think his stats would have looked even better last year had he been the starter coming out of fall camp and been the starter for that season opener last year and for the Pittsburgh game week two, rather than having to come in for an injured Joe Milton and then kind of taking the job and running with it from there. So I do think there's just going to be a natural bump in statistics if you're simply looking at it from that standpoint, just because he's going to get more playing time. He is the guy until he gets hurt, essentially, because I would be stunned if poor performance led to a different quarterback from Hendon. But in terms of just actual football and where he can improve there, I think maybe being more aggressive at times. Not that he isn't aggressive, but I do think you'll see him be more aggressive because he is so comfortable in this offense. He knows what he is doing. He knows he's the starting quarterback. He's not necessarily looking over his shoulder for Joe Milton. Joe and Hendon both understand that Hendon is the guy. So I think with that comfort level of knowing that he is the starting quarterback, I think he's going to be willing to take on more risk in a football game. And it's not going to be outrageous risk. It's not going to be a danger zone with Hendon. But I think as a result of him being more comfortable and that leading to him taking more risks, I think you'll see more splash plays. I know we saw plenty of splash plays last season, so I'm not sure how you even double up on that. But I kind of think that that's where his progression will come from as a passer and just being able to take more risks and being more aggressive, pushing the ball down the field. I think that's where you'll see him take that next step this season.
So a couple guys yesterday, Ben, and you know, I don't want to overreact, especially with freshmen, but Squirrel White, I mean, it's pretty obvious his speed. And, of course, there's been a lot of talk about him, Alex Golish talking about his maturity the other day, and there's a lot of buzz around him. So I wonder how much you think is realistic for him to factor in this year. But then also Dylan Sampson, and obviously knowing that there's a running back opening that they could use some more help, their depth is a little bit uncertain right now because of injuries. What do you think about those two freshmen?
I'm very high on both of them, and I do think that both will play as true freshmen in this offense this season. I do think that both will have good careers at Tennessee. I would be very surprised if they didn't. Squirrel White is just too good of a football player and has too good of a skill set not to have a productive college career. And then Dylan Sampson, I'm very high on him and his future because I think his skill set fits perfectly within this offense. I think it's exactly what Josh Heupel is looking for. He kind of reminds me of Jalen Wright, just a year behind. And I expect him to factor into that running back rotation. But I think the depth is a little less certain at receiver at the moment. I know running back is kind of the talking point, but I think Jabari Small is a very solid starting running back in the SEC. I think Jalen Wright is going to take a big step forward. And then I think those two freshmen are going to factor in as well, Dylan Sampson and then the other freshman running back, Justin Williams-Thomas. I think those two guys will battle it out for the fourth running back carries because it does seem like Tennessee is on the verge of adding Lynn J. Dixon, the former Clemson running back who transferred to West Virginia. It does seem like he's going to be a Vol by the end of the week. So the path to playing time won't be as clear for Dylan Sampson as it is for Squirrel White because right now in the receiver room, all you can trust is Cedric Tillman. Now, I think Jalen Hyatt is going to have an absolutely tremendous season. I think he's really going to have a breakout season and put all of his tools in his toolbox to use for the first time in his career. He's always had the ability to be one of the SEC's best playmakers with the ball in his hands, and I think you're going to see that this season. He's had a great off season. He's changed his outlook mentally and really gotten to a good point of understanding what he needs to do Monday through Friday to have an impact on Saturday. And that shift started midway through last season and has really carried over into the summer. He caught more footballs on the jug machine than any receiver in that room. And it was day one, but I thought you could tell that Jalen Hyatt was a different Jalen Hyatt yesterday. And I think he's going to have a breakout year. So Jalen will be in front of Squirrel White. So that maybe will limit some of Squirrel's snaps in the slot as well. But there's only one guy that you can definitively trust right now, and that's Cedric Tillman. I do think Jalen Hyatt, Brew McCoy will have impacts, but I think the depth at receiver is a little less certain than at running back. So I think there's a better chance of Squirrel White having an impact than Dylan Sampson.
Ben McKee from VolQuest.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Ben, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you making time to join us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You as well. Ben McKee, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Check out his work at VolQuest.com. We'll continue the conversation on the Vols, including a Twitter battle that Michelle Knezovic will have great interest in coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Well, I don't really know what to say coming back to break with this. What is this crap?
My Michelle old Kentucky home. My old Kentucky home.
Oh, my
gosh. It's our song.
Well, you know what? That makes some sense.
This sounds like some kind
of... I feel like I'm at a funeral.
Yeah, some kind of boys choir. That's my old Kentucky home?
Yes, and I did the sped-up version, so it wouldn't be
That's
too
the
bad.
Sped-up version?
That's the high energy version.
Listen, not everybody can be graced with Rocky Top, even though we all know I'm not a Vols fan.
Good
I do
gracious.
Love me some Rocky Top.
Yes, you're kind of a Vols fan.
Kind of.
Do they play that when they score a touchdown?
No, it's like after the game, everybody just kind of like you go from side to side.
Oh, it's like alma mater swaying back and forth.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
All right. Well, God bless Kentucky, I guess. Good gracious.
They played that at like a White Sox game. It'd be like the best sports atmosphere ever.
I think Tigers could have it beat.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting stuff. So to that
Where
point.
Do you go from there?
Well, I'm going to go here with it. So there's been this Twitter battle that I saw.
It's been intense.
It's been intense. And the first place I saw this came from Brandon Walker, not of the Nashville Predators. But a Barstool Sports that put this out there the other day. And the tweet, and I think I saw him and Chad Withrow go back and forth with each other on it, but Brandon Walker's original tweet was, quote, "The other day I opined that Kentucky football currently is a better program than Tennessee football. In the days since, Tennessee fans have not handled it well. The last 5 years, Kentucky is 40-23. Tennessee is 27-33. I want to apologize to UT fans. Kentucky has a much better program." That's coming from Brandon Walker on Twitter. So obviously that has led to a lot of discussion and a lot of debate about the state of the Kentucky football program and the state of the Tennessee football program as well. What do you make of all this, Rex Road? Does the University of Kentucky currently have a better football program than Tennessee?
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, it does.
This is such a ridiculous statement.
No. So I think that there's two ways to look at it. But right now, all the years Stoops has put in, what they've done consistently over time, you got a guy who – a year ago, the Vols freaking fired Jeremy Pruitt for cause, like in a complete disaster. I mean, it's 1 year into Heupel. Yes, right now, who has a better program? It's not even like it's not debatable. Now, who has a higher ceiling program? Who has more all-time better? I mean, all-time better program. Also, it's debatable, right? But right, I mean, to me, when you say who has a better program, that means who, like the coach. That means the coach currently, right? That's what it means to me. It means
The whole program. But yeah, it's not just the coach.
No, but I mean, but it's the coach in charge. What has been done? Where are they? And it's compared to the other coach. That's to me when you say who has a better program. That's what it means to me. So yes, I think absolutely Kentucky has a better program. Now, they'll never. I don't. I'll say never. But yeah,
never say never.
Yeah, I mean they're never gonna have the same ceiling that Tennessee does. They don't have the same. And that goes back to tradition and decades and resources and all. Look, they care more about basketball there. I mean, they just do. And I don't think that'll ever change, right?
Probably not.
So long term, but like the idea, like the fact that Tennessee's 3-2 or whatever in the last five against Tennessee. Okay, great. So you're taking dubs on Jeremy Pruitt's random, lucking into victories. I mean, he's gone.
I mean, did they win or not?
Well, yeah, they won, but it's Jeremy Pruitt. He's gone. I mean, that was, you know, that doesn't.
Well, that's great, but you're talking about Kentucky being a better football program, and they can't beat Tennessee. So well, what does that mean?
Well, they've lost 3 of 5.
Yeah,
which is actually for them. That's actually pretty.
So
good.
What does that tell you?
Well, but the record does tell me more. The record absolutely tells me more. The Tennessee.
This
the
is
Kentucky,
such a ridiculous statement. It's ridiculous.
It's not.
It is so ridiculous.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm sorry. Like the head to head, of course, matters, and it's incredible how Kentucky can never beat Tennessee. But you can't tell me that over the last few years that Tennessee's been a better football program than Kentucky.
Over the last few years? I mean, what are we talking about here? Like the last 3-4 years?
Well, we're talking about, again, Stoops has brought Kentucky to a place I never would have guessed Kentucky would get to at all. I mean, you're talking about a team that has actually competed. I mean, they played in like a championship game against Georgia, you know, the next to last game of the year or whatever.
And what happened the week after that?
Oh, I know. It's amazing. But does that make that Jeremy Pruitt bleep show better program? No. I mean, it's crazy they beat them. But, no, Stoops has brought Kentucky to a level of stability that I don't think there's any.
He's done a great job. Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And he has taken Kentucky football to a place where, number one, I didn't think they could get to, and number two, I think they got some staying power in terms of where they are. Like, I don't think they're ever going to be competing for the SEC East or anything like that. But I think they've got some staying power. As long as he's there, they can be a good, solid team. And look, who knows, with Levis, if you find a quarterback, then maybe you can have those years where you can make a jump, and maybe this year is that year where they can challenge. I don't know. But how can you be a better football program when your ceiling is what, 8 wins, 9 wins?
So
like, what is that?
Yeah, well, but again, but like, so it's two things. So the current, to me, who's a better program right now? Who's the coach here? Who's the coach here? What have they done? What's the last few years look like? That's the question. I mean, again, Josh Heupel's in year two. Who's the better all time? Like, if you're ranking, like, you know, if you're ranking the top 20 football programs of all time, whatever, Tennessee's easily in there. Kentucky's not even close to in there. So it's two different things. But the current program? Absolutely. To me, Kentucky's better than Tennessee. I'm sorry.
This is a level of stupidity that I just can't believe.
Wait,
is so dumb.
But you can't, listen.
So you're saying you can't separate those two things?
No!
Yeah, see, I disagree. I mean, you're talking historically. You know, historically.
That is what a football program is. The question is not who is the better team right now.
No, it's not.
It's a football program.
A program like Jeremy Pruitt's program happened. Butch Jones's program happened. Right now we're in the early stages of Josh Heupel's program, and they are different. Yes, they are all in the same place with some of, you know, you have the same fan base, resources, opportunity. But that's still the program. The coach determines the program. The coaching staff dictates what a program is. And again, Stoops has taken a program that's like historically not even close to Tennessee, and he's actually brought them to a higher level of achievement. So that's I define a program by who's in charge and what have they done.
I can't even do this.
I think you need to go get on the Vol Twitter, get with Vol Twitter and start firing off, you know, go get Matt Jones, go get Rex Chapman Jones.
We'll get all of them.
I will say it, SEC Media Day, like a lot of people were high on them. I'm not saying on program or anything, and I know everybody knows me as the Kentucky fan, but Tennessee obviously has, you know, the pedigree, but if you're looking at it right now, you can say the head-to-heads, like, Tennessee beats Kentucky. But
yeah, that's pretty important.
Florida in there. Throw Florida in there.
But they're crappy and they fire their coach.
Well, Florida's a better program than Tennessee is right now. I mean, look at the last 20 years. Who's a better program?
Yeah, Florida has been for sure. But again, like I'm when you ask that question, I'm like, well, let's see. Billy Napier, brand new. I mean, that's how I look at it. There's historically and – no, we would all agree Tennessee should be better. Tennessee has more opportunity to be better. It has been a long time since Tennessee's – I mean, when's the last time Tennessee exceeded 9 wins?
Exceeded 9 wins? Are you going back to early 2000s?
Yeah, you know. So it just – I look at program as coach.
So NIL, investment in program, boosters, none of that has anything to do with the program.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't. I mean, I think
– Well, then how is this conversation even close?
Because we're talking about achievement, man. Good gracious. It's stability and it's achievement. And it's Kentucky's been here, steady, better than I ever would have thought. Tennessee's like – and then, you know, they could go up here. Maybe they will soon, but they aren't right now.
Comment. Tennessee basketball – program has been better in the last 3 years, but Kentucky basketball season's ceiling is higher.
Well,
fair.
Well,
has Tennessee been always better in the last 3 years? I don't know. I mean, they were better this year.
They were better this year, but yeah, the ceiling. There's a difference. You know, there's a difference in those programs.
Is there?
Well,
by your logic, yeah. The Vols, baby, come on.
BBN Joe.
A couple games. I mean.
BBN Joe.
Let's quickly go to Adam in Portland on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, what's up?
So what you're saying is Tennessee clearly has a better basketball program than Kentucky. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
See, we already went there.
But, look, check it out, man. So tell me the name of the Wildcats football stadium. You'll probably know it because you're a sports guy, but most people won't.
Isn't it like Kroger or something or other?
Who knows, man?
Yeah, it is.
I don't even know that a lot of people in Kentucky probably don't even know it. And that's what I'm saying. Like, Neyland Stadium, the Vol atmosphere, the Power T, that's going to be relevant, man. I understand what you're saying. I think you're a smart guy. I think you're dead wrong on this.
I'm glad you think he's smart. I do, too, except for this segment.
There's a lot.
I shouldn't have let Adam on. I thought he was going to be on my side.
There's a lot of text line reaction to this. I guess it really, like, you have to define it, how you define program. And the basketball thing, the Vols have beaten Kentucky. Rick Barnes has beaten Kentucky, but over the last few years, has he had a better record? I mean, he hasn't gotten to, you know, he's done anything in the tournament. That's the problem.
Right.
Right. And Calipari's had some famous flameouts, and St. Peter's just got him. But I'd still say he's probably – like, he's gotten to the Elite Eight a few – so, eh. I mean, look, I think that Josh Heupel can reestablish this as Tennessee is definitely the better program, but he just hasn't yet done it.
We'll continue this discussion coming up next. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.